Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
My name is Fiona Au. I work for California State University, Dominguez Hills. Today I'm going to talk about our experience in developing Sisterhood Project, which is an adaptation of Sister, which was developed for African American women, and we are adapting it for Chinese massage parlor workers. So before I start talking about the project, I would like to acknowledge my co-author here, Dr. Lois Takahashi, who's in the audience today. Okay.
Okay. I'm sorry.
So I don't have any financial relationship to disclose. So a little background information on this particular population that we're dealing with. Existing research suggests that Asian massage parlor workers face a variety of HIV risks. So the first one is inconsistent condom use. Condoms are not encouraged in massage parlors because they can be used as evidence of prostitution. So managers usually do not make it available at the parlors. These women are having multiple sexual partners. They may be providing oral sex, vaginal intercourse, or handjobs to their customers. So on a good night, they can have up to 9 partners, which means it's 1,000 partners in a year. They usually encounter verbal and physical abuse from their customers because the customers feel like they pay money and then they can do whatever to the women. And a lot of them are in economic hardship. Also, they don't make money based on how many hours they work. They make money based on how many clients they serve. So the economic instability is an issue for this population. Okay. So before I started my career in teaching, I worked as a health educator at APIIT Health Center, which is a primary care clinic in LA specializing in HIV. And I was able to work with these women in the Sisterhood Project and get first-hand experience with these women. So starting around 2005, we started getting a lot of requests from monolingual Chinese women for HIV education. And then later we found that they're all massage parlor workers getting arrested, and the court mandated them to get HIV education and HIV testing. And fortunately, in 2007, we were able to get a grant from National AIDS Fund, now AIDS United, through the Generations 2 program to pilot this project, this adaptation project. And in 2010, we got a grant from California HIV Research Program to evaluate the effectiveness of our adaptation. So in this presentation, I will describe the process, how the team comes up with the decision that we did for adaptation, the lessons learned from our project, and I will talk about the adaptation phases in details. Okay. So we have 3 main adaptation phases, the pilot phase, phase 1, and phase 2. And in each phases, pretty much we encounter challenges, and then as a team, we come up with solutions and new adaptations for the curriculum. So first of all, why we want to adapt in the first place? Because there's no evidence-based intervention for Asian women. And we know that there's a need for HIV education for monolingual Chinese women in their language, but there's none in LA. So when these women get arrested, they can either go into an English class, come up with a certificate of completion without learning a thing, take it back to the court. We don't want that to happen. Or they can hire a very expensive interpreter to go in the classes with them, which they can't afford. So our solution for our first challenge is to adapt Sister, which was originally designed for African-American women, heterosexual women in a relationship. So Sister is a 5-session intervention. Each session is 2 hours long. It's based on social cognitive theory and the theories of gender and power. So mainly, it focuses on ethnic gender pride, condom negotiation with male partners. It has been adapted for Latinas and transgender women. So we thought we'll give it a shot, see if it works for Chinese women. Okay. So what we did at this phase is we did a translation. We took the curriculum, we translated it into Chinese. We took out all the African-American poems and put in Chinese poems. That's how the first thing we did in the adaptation. So we did that, and then we did encounter more challenges. We're not getting clients. And then, so we explore why we're not getting clients. We got a lot of requests. So it turns out that these women have very, very difficult schedule. So for women in SISTA, maybe they can meet up, you know, every weekend for 2 hours. But these women work 6-7 days a week, and they don't get time off on the weekend because it's the rush hour. So some women may get a day off on a Monday, some women may get a day off on a Friday. It's hard to get them together to participate in a group level intervention. So in order to address that, we shortened our program into a 2-day program instead of a 5-day program over 5 weeks. These women can finish the program in 2 days in the course of a week. It's also helpful in accommodating all the court-mandated clients because they need to get the certificate of completion to the court. Women are also saying that the scenarios in the curriculum does not apply to them. Since SISTA was designed for women in a romantic relationship, these women feel like dating is not their priority. So they just don't like the scenarios. And when we translated the curriculum into Chinese, we figure there's no word for assertiveness in Chinese, not even a closed concept. So we really had to be very creative. So we reduce the session. So in order to address the scenario problem, we talked to them, and then we found that they really want to talk about the immigration experience. They really want to talk about isolation, stress, and rejection related to immigration, and also the stigma with their line of work, because they reported a lot of stigma, not just from their friends, their partners, from their family. And then we develop exercises for them to build up the negotiation skills. Since they don't get the whole assertiveness idea, we have them come up with examples of how they negotiate back home. And then we try to point out the things that matches, that has the traits of assertiveness in order to show them. Okay. So we thought that was pretty good, and then we piloted for phase two. We had 75 clients, and their evaluation data was good. It was effective. So in phase two, we would like to address a couple more challenges that the feedback we got from the clients. One, they feel like, yes, now they know how to negotiate with the partners, but at the parlors, women who work there are Asians, but their clients are not. So even though they know how to negotiate in Chinese, they cannot use it at their workplace. And number two, in the original curriculum, it's focused on romantic partners. There's no scenario that focuses on customers who pay for sex. So those two are the things that we need to address in phase two. So in phase two, we added nonverbal negotiation. So a lot of gesture, and women also reported that how you position yourself in the massage room is very important. For example, you want to be by the door. So if you really don't want to do something, you won't be coerced into providing the sex service. We teach them chicking. Does everyone know what chicking is? So chicking is a technique that's commonly used for sex workers. That means you hide the condoms in your mouth and then you just put it on. So that skips the negotiation process. And clients rarely want to take it off after the woman put it on with the mouth. And we added specific scenarios to address commercial sex work. So we actually asked the women, you know, how it is actually done in the massage parlor, and it looks a lot like negotiating for a product. So they would take out a calculator and go, you know, $100 with condom, you know, $120 without condom. And then, you know, we teach them, you know, how you would choose which option. You know, if you protect yourself, you make a little less money, but then the benefits is a lot greater. Okay. So all these adaptation decisions were made as a team, and it's a great interdisciplinary team with a program evaluator, behavioral scientists, workshop facilitators, and also program manager and our agency director. So every month, we sit under this table together. We talk about challenges, successes, and try to problem solve as a group. We gave these women a formal survey. They would tell us what they like, what they don't like, which activity works and which activity doesn't work. And then we'll look at this data. We also look at the facilitator notes. We take very detailed facilitator notes. Everything that's said in the workshop and also side conversation that I overheard that women were talking about, I would put them into the notes so we know exactly what's going on. And we try to incorporate all this feedback into our adaptation decisions. So some lessons learned from our project is that cultural adaptation is really a very difficult, more complicated process. We need to take into account various cultures in your population. So in our case, the immigration culture, sex worker culture, and even the subculture. These women are sex workers, but they don't identify themselves as sex workers. Women who work in massage parlor doing sex work is very different from women who run an escort service or, you know, street sex workers. And it's very important to monitor what our clients are telling us. Sometimes you see something come up from one workshop, you may not think much about it, but if you see a pattern, if it happens at multiple sessions, then we have to do something to address that. And adaptation is more than translation. We learn it the hard way from our pilot phase. Okay, and lastly, I would like to acknowledge our funding sources, National AIDS Fund, and also California HIV Research Program. And I would like to thank my mentor from APIT, Lillian Chu. She was the person who took the initiative to apply for the first seed grant for us to pilot this project. So, thank you.